We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Gentleman who will have a particular interest in what's going on in that race joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We know him as number 43 from the Cavaliers, and it was great to work with him as part of our Cavalier broadcast crew on Fox Sports Ohio this year. But he's one of the owners of JTG Doherty Racing. He'll be rooting for number 37 and number 47 coming up on Sunday. He's Brad Doherty. Hello, Brad.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing well. How about you? You ready for some racing?
I am. Actually, it's afternoon where you guys at. I'm actually in California, so it's morning for me, but yeah, man, looking forward to getting over to Darlington. It's a tough place to jump back into after having a break because it's such a difficult racetrack. But, man, just to get something going sport-related-wise, I'm excited. So we'll see what happens.
Brad, I'm just curious. We've talked about this. Like, when everything started shutting down in the beginning, it looked like NASCAR was going to ride that first weekend, and they, you know, and then they obviously they didn't. Is this not a golden opportunity for NASCAR to maybe help out with some popularity issues and just, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on NASCAR this weekend. I mean, just your thoughts on that and how big of a weekend this could be for NASCAR?
Yeah, I think all of the above. You know, I think that one of the things that is, has been a constant conversation has always been, especially kind of outside of the sport, has been the audience and the fans and the lack of, and people, you know, and NASCAR, the racing business in general has just changed over the last decade. Just it's really difficult to get people to lock in for 4 hours on anything, much less a really long race. And so this will be a great opportunity to kind of see the sport and to get some, hopefully, a fresh set of eyes. A set of weary eyes that are looking and jonesing for some sports. So I think it's very, very important that everything goes off without a hitch, which is going to be almost impossible to do. But I know the guys over at NASCAR are working really, really hard. President Steve Phelps and his group have put a ton of thought and process into how this is hopefully going to play out. And like I say, going back to Darlington is a really difficult place to start. Because it's really warm. It'll be 90 degrees most of the day over there on that in that track surface. So it's really hard to jump back in and have an uneventful race. But that could be good. That could be exciting to watch. So should be fun. Should be interesting.
Steve Phelps, no relation, by the way, just in case anybody's wondering.
Of course.
Brad, no practice, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, no practice, no qualifying, crew members cut down to 16, including the driver. What does all that do for your team in trying to get ready for a race?
Yeah, it's really, really hard, Jeff. But for my team, you know, we're a mid-sized team. Got a couple really good race car drivers. Got a young guy in Ryan Preece, and then got a veteran that we brought over in Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And so for us, the difficult thing at Darlington, It's a D-shaped type racetrack that doesn't have a lot of grip. And if you ever, a lot of people have never gone and actually stood and watched, but if you could go and stand and physically look at this racetrack and watch these real heavy race cars run around this racetrack at 180 miles an hour, you could just see the skill that it takes. And it's breathtaking, to be honest with you, because they come off of the corner off two, and you have to go right up and almost touch the wall. They're in a full power slide, just, you know, you watch that car drift at 160 miles an hour, and it's just drifting, 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 and then it finally catches grip right at the wall. So you're aiming at the wall when you come off the corner. So this place not having any practice, not being able to you know, get a good feel for the compound of tire. Like I said, it'll be hot. It'll be 90 degrees. So inside that race car, you're getting into temperatures of 120, 125. And to be able to concentrate, these guys, you know, unlike stick and ball, unlike basketball or football, baseball, race car drivers physiologically have to train a little bit differently. But they have to train because it's your heart rate gets up so high driving the race car, obviously. It becomes exhausting. Even though you're not running, jumping, playing, your heart rate stays, you know, some of these guys' heart rate, you know, get up into 120s, 125s, and they stay there for hours. And so you're just exhausted, and this racetrack is probably in the top three of the most difficult physically, the most difficult racetracks we go to. So it's going to be scary. The first lap out, you will be at full speed, and usually we spend a whole day before we get up to full speed there. But your first lap's going to be at full speed, and so it's going to be exciting. Hopefully, it's not expensive. But it's going to be exciting for sure.
I've never heard that. That's a great line.
We've never talked to a NASCAR owner before. That's why we've never heard it before.
That's a good point. Hey, Brad, what does NASCAR have on tap for this weekend as far as the COVID-19 testing? And you know, how is, you know, I think initially we talked about it. We were trying to figure out, well, can guys in the pits wear masks? But they're already wearing masks. What's it going to look like from that standpoint?
Man, it's going to be interesting. You know, we've had a lot of dialogue, and you know, like I say, we're down to 16 people in total with the driver. Normally, we have, I mean, some events we'll have, you know, 60 or 70 people from the organization in there in some way, shape, form, and then maybe 200 to 300 people from a sponsorship side. So that's going to be really interesting. We get to the racetrack. Have to go through a thermal scanner for temperature, and all of our guys, anyone, our guys and gals who work on our race programs, we all have, like I say, physiological workups, so we kind of know where everyone's at because, you know, the sport has changed so much, and we want to, you know, most of these guys and gals are really, really good athletes, and we train as athletes, so you understand, like I say, where most of these people are at. Physically, so you have those reports. We have a team of doctors that will be, and immunologists that will be at the racetrack, and like I say, they will scan everyone. It's going to look like going through TSA. Everyone gets thermal scanned, and they look at their records and check them off, and then if you're okay, you proceed on. You have to wear a mask and gloves at all times. It's going to be interesting around the race car because you're thrashing and working on a race car. I mean, it's like a monkey hanging out of a tree. You're everywhere, and you're bumping into, and you're knocking into, and you're, you know, getting nicks and cuts and scrapes and sweat and dirt and oil, working with, you know, around exhaust that's 500 degrees. So it's going to be interesting to see how, because we have to socially distance in the garage area, and I just don't know. It's just, we're just going to have to see what happens. If you have something, a bent fender or things like that, you have to repair. It usually takes more than two sets of hands. So, but anyway, everyone's got masks and gloves. They're going to continue throughout the day to monitor people. And if you come in to the facility and you have any type of anything, a little bit of temperature, any type of cough, hack, cold, sneeze, anything, you go back, you go home. And they're going to monitor people throughout the day, like I say. And if you start to show signs of, you know, anything outside of maybe getting a little bit too much heat in your body, which you're going to do, or even if you have that, you have to go down. They take you. They take you into the facility. They've created like a hospital, basically, that they've erected there on the property. You have to go in there. They treat you. They watch you. They confine you. It's going to be unbelievable. The undertaking is unbelievable. And then going over pit wall for pit stops, guys have to have gloves and masks and those types of things. And, you know, just walking around with these masks on, what a pain in the butt it is. Just imagine it being 90 degrees outside and you're hustling around and trying to sling around an 80-pound tire and wheel and jumping over the wall. It's just going to be interesting. So, but the teams that can go there and mentally overcome are going to be the ones that have success. And so everyone's in. I mean, my guys have been dying to get to the racetrack. They were dying to come back to work. So this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be different, but man, we just can't wait to put on a show.
Brad Doherty joining us, JTG Doherty Racing. Brad's one of the owners of the team. They'll be at Darlington. You'll hear it right here on 92.3 The Fan on Sunday. Brad, I ask you this with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek. I can't believe Petty Enterprises didn't cough up number 43 for you.
Well, yeah, the king is very, very tight, and it could have probably been, it would have been one heck of a payment that would have had to have taken place for that 43 to be given up. So that wasn't going to happen just gratuitously. So, yeah, it didn't
That's
work
funny.
Out.
He's one of the reasons you're such a big NASCAR guy, right, going back to when you were a kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, as a kid growing up, and you hear it in my voice, my little North Carolina twang. My dad was a huge race fan, huge Richard Petty fan, and he always was cheering for Richard Petty. And so I started cheering for Richard Petty as a kid, and actually, you know, met Richard Petty when I was a young man, and he spent some time with him. It just left a heck of an impression upon me. He knew a little bit about where I was from, and just, you know, and so then we became friends. And over the years, Richard would when I was playing basketball, whether I was in North Carolina or in the pros, he would reach out to me and talk to me a little bit. He swore he knew something about basketball because he, you know, he contended he played basketball back in the 1800s when he was in high school. So, you know, he knows a lot about race cars, but he has no idea what he's talking about. But he was always trying to tell me what I needed to be doing. So it's
nice.
Great. But he's still kicking. He's still going strong. He's like 85, 86 years old, and he's at the racetrack every weekend. It's good to see.
That's awesome. Brad, let's switch gears over to the NBA for a second. Are you
optimistic?
What do you think? Do you think they're coming back, or what's it going to take to come back, and what do you think it's going to look like if they do?
Yep. Been privy to a couple of conversations with the league, and this is what concerns me. I think that I'm glad to see that I think we've gotten every player on board, and everyone's anxious to come back and play. I think for a while there, guys were kind of and looking at some of the union reps, they were kind of reticent. You know, some guys wanted to come back, some guys didn't want to come back, and you know, they really want to see what's going to happen and this, that, and the other. And you know, when you start talking about salary impact, it seems to get everyone's attention, and so now everyone seems to be on board with coming back. But my concern in trying to come back to play this season is how do you get to the playoff structure? And it's been thrown around in a myriad of ways, but the bottom line is you need time. You cannot come back and ask these guys to play in a playoff series in 2 weeks. You're going to hurt someone really badly. So you need about 2 to 3 good weeks of game scheduling. So I'm optimistic, and it continues to change every day. I think as we continue to learn a little bit more about the COVID-19 situation and what's relevant, what's real, what's not real, which we're still working through a lot of that, I'm optimistic that we can get the season resumed. But I think it's going to be difficult, and we're going to have really, really thoughtful people involved to make sure we don't hurt people going forward. That's going to be the big thing, because you get these guys, man, and you can train as hard as you want to train, but you can't assimilate playing against people of your same skill level and speed and strength and that type of thing. And if you go into it too quickly, with a lot on the line, you're looking at, you know, tearing ACLs and MCLs and stuff like that, and you just don't want that to happen. So I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful because I was really having a great time doing basketball with Jeff and those guys. It just what a lot of fun. And the Cavs have been struggling, but you could see the bright spots. And very optimistic about them as well going forward. So I want to see them finish off the season strong so we can start next season and be really, really raring to go.
Yeah, Brad, you're doing great work with us on Fox Sports Ohio. That was a lot of fun. I mentioned this on the air a couple of weeks ago, and you have a different perspective on the other big story going on in the NBA, the Last Dance documentary that's been on ESPN with Michael Jordan. And I mentioned this in one of the playoff series losses. I remember I was standing by you, and I don't remember if we were sitting in the airport that night when the flight got canceled. We had to go back to the hotel if it was in the locker room. But I remember you shaking your head and saying, "That dang guy." And I thought, yeah. All right, so Brad had to deal with him in the pros.
I feel a lot worse than that about him, I guarantee you.
Well, you played with him in college for 2 years.
What are your thoughts
as you've watched this, knowing that at one time you're pulling for him like crazy, and at the other time you're trying to beat him like crazy?
Yeah, you know, it's been – I haven't watched any of the Last Dance, but I hear about it every other day when I'm out and about. Or I've talked to Mark Price a lot. We talk, or Larry, and we talk about certain things. But, you know, and it's interesting, you know, to know Michael a long time, obviously since the mid-early 80s. And, for me, I'm really kind of disappointed. I mean, it happens to our group a lot. They just kind of gloss over, you know, our basketball team and where we came from and how we developed. And it's frustrating from that standpoint, because everyone talks about the shot all the time, which is okay. I understand. But to hear the shot broken down in so many different ways, and you know, the bottom line on that is that Craig was in excellent defensive position. And what a lot of people don't realize is Larry, you know, the whole thing was drawn up brilliantly by Coach Wilkins. He had Larry coming over to double team at the last second. And so Michael was going to have to shoot over both of those guys. Well, the ball fake took Larry away just for a step or two, and it threw him off where he was late getting there. So Craig had given Michael just an extra 2 feet of room so Larry could slide in, and he just never got there, and the guy hit a heck of a shot. So, but it's been interesting. I mean, I think the thing that's really interesting to me is people are getting to see Michael's personality and, you know, how driven and what type of competitor and what type of individual he is or was on the basketball court. And so you get to take from that what you will, but and we're all, you know, he's the all-time gamer, no doubt about it. But I will say this, though. I do not think that Michael would have won a championship. I think Scottie Pippen, I know it is the biggest reason that basketball team was able to go and get to the places they got to. When Scottie became Scottie, top 50 player in the all time in the league, they were indefensible because you had two dynamic ball handlers with the basketball. You know, we played them obviously six times a year every year, and you knew Michael was going to. And you know, Michael scored a lot. He scored 69 on us one night, but he took 37 shots. You know, he could take right. That's fine. He's going to take 35 shots. That's absolutely fine. You're going to beat them. But when Scottie became the player he became, I never will forget playing them. And, you know, Michael's doing whatever he's doing, and you're just trying to not let anyone else beat you. But I remember Scottie started making these shots because the triangle, it put the ball in Michael and Scottie's hands 90% of the time, which is kind of unique because that's the way the game's played today. Everyone else on that basketball team back then was just kind of there. They were just kind of placeholders. It was all about who was dominating that basketball. And when you have two dynamic ball handlers that can get to the front of the rim, especially in that era of playing inside out, it was so unique that it was almost impossible to figure out how to guard. And so when Scottie started driving to the basket, you know, I played with obviously two of the best shot blockers I've ever seen in Hot Rod and Larry. He would drive and he would shoot this shot off the glass that you couldn't get to it. And he would make it consistently. And I remember telling Larry, I said, man, he's going to be a problem. This is going to be a problem. This is going to be a problem for the league. And lo and behold, and he just does not get the credit he deserves because everyone's enamored with Michael, obviously. And I understand why. I mean, he's the greatest to ever play. But Scottie Pippen is the one that people need to really look at and appreciate because without him, I don't think Michael wins.
Hey, Brad, I know you said you weren't watching the documentary, but there was the point, and I'm sure this guy's brought it up, that Ron Harper said that he wanted to cover Jordan and he was disappointed about it. Do you recall that situation, or do you remember Harper being upset?
No. I remember being in that huddle. I remember Lenny drew this up to the tee because Lenny was excellent. If you gave him a timeout, when he drew something up, man, I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10 it worked. And he was very, very clear that he wanted – Craig Elo was a hell of a defender. Everyone talks about the shot and Elo and all this crap. Man, night in and night out, Craig was a nightmare for people to defend. Craig was 6'7", could move laterally as fast as anyone. And he did a good job every night. And he was our best primary defender on the perimeter every night. And so I remember Lenny telling Craig, this is where I want you. If you can stay in this position, which I know you can, and I remember Lenny saying, just stay there and make sure you drive him back towards the sideline because Larry's going to be there. And I said, this is excellent because he's going to have to take a 30-foot shot over Larry Nance at the end. And I like those odds.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember. Now, if Ron said something to Coach as they walked away or something, I didn't hear it. I talked to Coach Wilkins just a few weeks ago. He's clear as a bell. And he remembers things that I don't remember. And he's 30 years older than I am. So I would ask him if he remembers something like that. And I think he said he doesn't remember that. So I don't know. I think that – and I saw where, you know, I heard where Michael said, you know, it would have been tougher if Ron was on it. I think the reality of that is Ron became an unbelievable defender later on in his career. But I think Michael is being courteous to his teammate and friend, but I think if it was all honesty, and Michael hit an unbelievable shot and Craig did a really good job and he was in good position, there's nothing else that could have been done. You could have forced him further to the sideline, but that wasn't going to happen because time was going by. He had no further to go. Yeah. He just hit a heck of a shot. So I don't recall that if it did happen. I mean, I'm not saying Ron's a liar or anything like that. He said it happened. And I guess if you can get Coach Wilkins to validate it, it did, but I didn't hear that.
Brad, I got to tell you, we could talk to you for about 17 hours, but you have places to go, people to see, and you have to get to Darlington, South Carolina. So thank you, buddy. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on, and you guys keep doing a great job. You're great to listen to, and I appreciate the opportunity to spend a little time with you.
And we know who we're going to be rooting for on Sunday, number 37 with Ryan Preece and 47 with Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Absolutely. That's what we need.
All right, Brad. Appreciate it, bud.
Okay, take care.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.